Hey, this is Heath Mulliken with the Double Drop Kick Show.
This is Mark Whitman with the Double Drop Kick Show.
Just in case you did not know, this is the Double Drop Kick Show.
The only wrestling podcast where we talk about the wrestling you grew up on.
And when we're not recording this wrestling podcast and working hard for the money, we sometimes listen to other podcasts.
Every now and again.
Mark, you were listening to a podcast the other day and had a story to tell.
I found it interesting. I was listening to Triple H on Chris Jericho's podcast. I don't listen to Jericho's podcast a whole lot because he's kind of goofy.
And he doesn't talk about wrestling.
He doesn't always talk about wrestling. He talks about, and that's cool. I mean, but I do listen to it occasionally when he interviews somebody that I want to hear. And I just skip over the pre-banter, you know what I mean? But we made the comment a couple of weeks ago about how Triple H doesn't like the fact that Foley's the guy who made him. He wanted it to be. He would rather it have been a Rocker in Austin. And I listened to the entire interview, and I thought, man, he's really coming across really well. And he really doesn't sound like the guy that you hear he is a lot of times. Until Jericho asked him what his favorite matches he'd been involved in were.
Right.
And he started talking about the Royal Rumble match with Mick Foley.
Yeah.
Which is a phenomenal match.
Yeah.
But what he said was, the reason I liked the match so much is not only was it a great match, it was the first time that anybody looked at me and anybody looked at Mick Foley as a top guy. And I thought, where have you been? Mick Foley main evented against Sting. He main evented against Vader. He had a lengthy program with Steve Austin, a lengthy program with The Rock.
Right.
Several. Mick Foley was a top guy.
Yeah.
And this was one match away from his first retirement match.
Right.
Where they had the Hell in a Cell match and he retired.
Yeah.
And he made Triple H. But in Triple H's version of the story, they made one another.
Right. Right.
In other words, now people looked at Mick Foley as a top guy because he worked with me.
Oh,
and I
gotcha.
Just thought, that to me ruined all the other good stuff that he had said. Just acknowledge the fact that that program is the one that took you to the next level.
Yeah.
Why did he have to say that he made Foley as well? We made one another in that match. No, that's not what happened.
Yeah.
That is not what happened. I was a fan at the time. I remember walking away from
you were there.
Okay, Triple H is a big deal now because he just had the. That's what I remember thinking, and it's what almost everybody else thinks. And I just thought it was a slap in the face to Mick Foley to say he had not been a top guy up until that point. What he said was, well, he had had his deal with Undertaker.
Yeah.
You mean the most iconic wrestling moment from the 90s?
Right.
The deal with the Undertaker. He main evented a pay-per-view with Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
The guy, he had been a top guy for years.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean that they saw him as the top guy?
Right.
No, clearly they didn't. But he was a top guy. He was one of, listen, on that Monday Night War documentary they got, one of the header, the picture that you see before the episode is of Mick Foley.
Yeah.
Clearly, he was a big deal during that era.
More importantly than Mick Foley being the guy, he was your guy.
Oh, yeah. I was a big, big Mick Foley fan.
Yeah.
Still am.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was a Cactus Jack fan.
Yeah.
Bang, bang. Put it that way, yeah. And my nephew now likes Mick Foley, which is cool.
It's, man, I'm telling you, it's the wrestling we grew up with. And speaking of the wrestling we grew up with, we're going to take you to this week's gimmick table. Now, at last month's Legends Fan Fest, Kevin Sullivan was there. He had a plethora of DVDs. Not legal, by the way.
Most we don't want to say that. I don't.
They were bootleg.
Yeah, they were.
Let's say this.
Yeah, they were.
Because most of the things he had on DVD have never been on DVD.
No, he had some good stuff.
But they were copied from VHS. Perhaps that's a better term than bootleg.
Yeah, they were copies. Yeah.
And if you happen to find Mark's Kevin Sullivan DVD, it's
man.
MIA. You talked about it on one of the shows. I'm like, we need to see that.
I was tore up. I know
it's
somebody somewhere in that hotel found that DVD and they're watching.
And it's autographed.
Yeah, it was autographed by Kevin Sullivan and I lost it.
We're going to keep looking for it. Well, it's in that Kia somewhere.
If anybody finds a best of Kevin Sullivan doing the gimmick with the purple haze and all that stuff, it was a couple of hours long just of those matches and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And Kevin Sullivan autographed it for me. And I lost it.
I say all that to say, he also had two DVDs that I've always seen the VHS, never seen on DVD, and they're just, again, copies of copies. Crockett Cup 87 and 88. The first Crockett Cup was in 86. Second one was 87. That was in Greensboro. The third one was in 88, and it was in Greenville the first night, and Greensboro the second. Now, I've talked about, you know, the fact that I got to go to the one in Greenville. Very, very good. What I want to talk to you about is, unfortunately, you can't buy these DVDs anywhere. We have looked. We have tried. At wrestling shows, you could get it. However, Crockett Cup 87 is on YouTube. We will put a link to that in here. You need to go watch it. I wanted to put this on the gimmick table today because our topic is thrown together tag teams. Never more so did you see this than in the Crockett Cup tournaments, because they're like, man, oh goodness, we need 24 teams. Yeah. We need 32 teams, and we ain't got that many.
Right.
So they would throw them together. These are not the greatest DVDs of all time. These are not the greatest matches of all time. The commentary is done in post-production because they edit it all down. Because back then, you had, for the Crockett Cup, you would have had two nights of three-hour shows, and it's edited down to 2 hours of video.
Yeah.
So some of the matches, you get 1 minute of the match that may have gone 7 or 8 minutes. But it's the wrestling I grew up on, and I've enjoyed, you know, going back and watching those. There is one part, Crockett 88, I can't remember the match. I've been going through with a fine-tooth comb on that DVD, where Mac McGill and I walk past the camera. And
really?
Until it's us. Because it was similar to when you and I walk into a room, you see a little guy and a big guy.
Right.
And I remember when I rented the VHS, probably from Jerry's Video, Mac's a big guy, and that night he had on a white shirt and camouflage pants. And it's clear, you see the white shirt, and you see I'm kind of the little blur in front of him. So I'm trying, you know, I'm hoping that gets on the WWF Network, because I'm telling you, I'd pop for that.
I bet you would. If you make it to WWE Network, I'll pop for that.
Hey, hey. But again, the link to the Crockett Cup 87 will be in the show notes. But if you ever have an opportunity to buy historic things like this that were only put out on VHS, never officially put on DVD, again, you're going to buy a copy of a copy. Mine just says CC87 and CC88 on the DVD.
I'm guessing that we'll never see those on DVD. Wouldn't you think? I can't imagine that they'll ever release those.
No.
Because I don't know what the market is for.
No. Speaking of, I was just telling you, I saw Crockett Promotions has a Facebook page now. They're actually doing a Crockett Cup this month. I think September the 20th, which I don't know when this is airing, but they've either already had it. Unfortunately, it's too far away. It's like 5 hours away, or I was really going to try it. That would have been a cool thing to go to. It's at a Baptist church, which you don't see that every day.
No, you don't.
Either.
No, you don't.
So Crockett Cup, you get there, and there's always, like I said, these thrown-together tag teams. So let's go back a little bit to the 70s. Mid-Atlantic area was a hotbed for tag teams.
Yes, sir.
And when you think back to some of the 70s, have you been watching the Mid-Atlantic DVDs?
Oh, yeah.
I would love to get your thoughts. What is the thinking behind just throwing two guys together, putting them in a tag team, where they don't have a gimmick, they don't have a name? That probably maybe started back in the 50s, 60s. I don't know. I think...
The Kangaroos were the first real tag team, and they were the first – a tag team kind of started in Australia.
Yeah.
And they were the first tag team with a gimmick.
Yeah.
They wore the hat with the thing, and they would, I think, throw out boomerangs.
Can I just say, there were two guys at the Fan Fest.
Yeah.
Dressed up, and I'm going to tell you, I don't know how you felt. I dug it.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was cool.
I thought it was awesome because every day they dressed like the Kangaroos. They had the gear. They had the boomerangs. I said, I wouldn't have the guts to be like that.
No, I kind of wished, and there was part of me that thought it would have been cool if when Hofer was there, if we could have dressed up as the Freebirds. I thought that would have been cool.
You would have made me be Buddy Jack Roberts.
Well, no, yeah, it wouldn't have mattered. As long as I got to be Terry Gordy, y'all could have fought over it. I mean, which one of y'all was going to be Terry Gordy? You know what I mean? So I wouldn't care.
Hey, well, we got an idea for next year.
That's right.
But
I already got the hair.
You do got the hair. I do not have the hair or the beard.
Somebody'd have to wear a wig.
I'd be more like Doc Hendricks. As you think back, as you've been watching those Mid-Atlantic, what were some of the teams that you remember seeing? And then let's work our way into the wrestling we grew up with. And then I want to talk about today, just some of the stuff they do today with tag teams that just is nauseating.
Just awful. Well, I mean, you know, if you're talking about Mid-Atlantic, the first one that would pop into my mind would be Don Kernodle and Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah.
It really didn't make a whole lot of sense for them to be teaming up, but they did team up, and they won the titles and then led to the final conflict where they battled Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood in the cage. Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood were kind of a thrown together.
Yes,
tag team, but it worked. They looked a lot alike. They had similar styles, and as long as Jay Youngblood was clean, Ricky Steamboat, they were really good friends.
Yeah.
And Steamboat would team up with him, but when he would start to get into the heavy drug use, Steamboat would split the team up, and he wouldn't. He was a good enough friend that he would not enable that.
Right.
That behavior.
Right.
So he would say, "No, I'm not teaming up with you if you can't stay clean."
Yeah.
And they'd split up, and then he'd come back, and he got clean, and they got back together again. And they fought in the final conflict with the losing team having to split up.
Yeah.
Which split up Kernodle and Slaughter, and then, you know, heading this. If you don't know, the final conflict is what set up Starrcade.
Yeah, and we're putting a link to this in. We'll put a link to the final conflict.
Yeah, you can watch. It's on YouTube, and we'll link to it. But then Kernodle joins up with Ivan Koloff, and I think Crusher Khrushchev was with him at that point. I can't remember.
I think
I think Darso hadn't come in yet. But anyway,
right before they brought in Nikita.
Right, it was right before Nikita came in. Because
I don't know if you know this. Don Kernodle was the one that brought in Nikita. Well, did you know
that's
that?
That's his story.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he did have something to do with it, being part of that. But that led to him getting ousted from the Russians and Nikita coming in. And then Nikita and Ivan at Starrcade 84 fought. It wasn't Don Kernodle because he was
injured.
He was injured, but he brought in his brother, and I forget what they called him, but he became Rocky Kernodle.
Right.
I can't remember the name, but he teamed with Ole Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
If you can believe that, to take on the Russians.
Yeah.
So Ole Anderson was the good guy at Starrcade 84.
Oh, my God. Now, if you go back, even that whole time period, even before then, you had like the Briscoes. Okay, they're brothers. Oh, I understand that tag team. When they brought in the Andersons, you had Lars, Gene, and Ole. Well, to my knowledge, Gene was the only actual Anderson.
That's correct.
But they made it, hey, they're brothers. So it makes sense that they're a tag team. Von Erichs, they're brothers. Makes sense that they're a tag team.
The Road Warriors made sense. The Midnight Express made sense because they came in as a tag team.
Yes, yeah, and that's what we're talking about is the difference between the Road Warriors and Dusty Rhodes and Manny Fernandez.
Right. Where the Road Warriors were a tag team package. If one of them left, both of them left.
Yes,
they dressed alike a little bit. You know, I mean, there was a similar attire. You know,
from the same place.
Right.
You know.
Supposedly they were brothers.
Right.
There's a difference between a real tag team and one when you just take two guys who may be kind of floundering around a little bit and you put them together.
Yeah.
I think we detailed that on a previous show.
Yeah.
The philosophy behind that. So there's no reason to go back through that whole thing again. But you can find it at DoubleDropKick.com.
You even go back to Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch. They're both from Texas. They're the Texas Outlaws. It's a tag team that makes sense. And sometimes, and one of the teams we talked about on that other episode was your favorite, I'm just totally kidding. But Strikeforce, where you had two singles guys, mm-hmm. they put them together and then gave them a gimmick.
Right, right, after they saw that it was working.
Right. We want to talk about the tag teams that really didn't have a gimmick. You mentioned, you go back, there's a nice little string of thrown together tag teams. You mentioned Carnoodle and Slaughter, which led to Steamboat and Youngblood, which led to Carnoodle and Koloff, who eventually lose the belts to Dusty Rhodes, Manny Fernandez. I think they lose them back to the Russians. Rock and Roll Express comes in. And then for a while, it is that it's tag teams.
Right.
By then, they've kind of got a stable of tag teams packaged as tag teams mm-hmm. where the belt, at that point in time, I think the Assassins were still in.
Who were also, NWA. You know, the Assassins were also the Bolos.
Yes.
I didn't know if you knew that.
I did know that, but only because you point. I think
you only know it because I told you.
You know, I think I knew that from Mid-Atlantic Memories. From
probably so, yeah. Probably
that's a great because there's a whole chapter on Jody Hamilton, aka the Assassin. One of the teams, one of my favorite teams of that era, I would say 83 to 86. Paul Jones, who during the '70s was just a tag team legend. They really could put him with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And
he teamed with Steamboat.
Team with Steamboat. I'm trying to think. You know, another team, I didn't realize they were a team, and you would not put these two guys together in your mind, is Orndorff and Snuka.
Yeah.
And they were a very successful tag team. But Paul Jones becomes a heel manager in the 80s, and he builds Paul Jones' army. He pays off, we talked about this before, he pays off the Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bring in Rick Rude. I think Rick Rude came in from World Class, if I'm not mistaken. And they put in the Raging Bull and Rick Rude together.
Uh-huh.
And they won the belts from the Rock and Roll Express. And I like looking back, I hated.
The Awesome Twosome.
Yes.
That's what they called themselves. I thought that was awful.
Yeah. But as I'm looking back, like I hated them because I liked them. You know what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You like to hate
them. Yes. And what a lot of people don't, and you know this because you're a know-it-all, but they actually, Rude's leaving for WWF, if I'm not mistaken. They had a non-title match that was taped and actually played back that tape on TV as the title match.
Right.
But legitimately, Rick Rude and Manny Fernandez are still the NWA World Tag Team Champion, never lost the belts.
Hmm. So they could, well, they couldn't, but yeah.
They have a claim to the
throne. That's right.
But I loved.
Much like Bret Hart is still the WWF champion.
No, I would disagree with that. Well, yeah. I'm trying to think back to, were there any, think back to those 80s, any other kind of thrown together tag teams that caught your. I'm trying to build because one of ours from the 90s was just, I still to this day, probably our favorite thrown together.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know who you're going to talk
and
about.
And that is the Hollywood Blondes.
Oh, yeah, man.
Little did we know in Anderson, South Carolina, watching those guys, that, man, Steve Austin's going to be.
Yeah, that we're sitting five feet from the biggest.
Yeah, about to be. Yeah. Those two guys were thrown. I mean, Austin was supposed to get a run with the U.S. title with Harley Race, and they throw him and Pillman together. Everything mm-hmm. changes. And they really threw them together to not bury them, but just put them on the shelf.
Just to give them something to do. Yeah.
Right. They're going to be utility guys.
Right. And they got over.
Oh, my goodness.
And they got over big.
They got over big. I mean, they ended up feuding with the returning
Ric Flair. Yeah.
I mean, that is huge. What, as you think back to that, if we had a young tag team sitting right here, and you were using the blueprint of the Hollywood Blondes, of you're thrown together tag team, how do you make chicken salad out of this?
Mm-hmm.
What would you take as the blueprint that the Hollywood Blondes did? Not from the booking aspect, but what Steve Austin and Brian Pillman did within themselves to get over. What would you say to...
I think the biggest thing that they did was they accepted it
mm.
and ran with it and said, okay, if we're going to do it, then we're going to do it. And this is what we've been given. Now I'm going to take it and make something good out of it. And that's just a trait that everybody who makes it to the top, not just of wrestling,
right,
but of any business has. Whatever the circumstances are, I'm going to do it better than you.
Yeah.
And I think they went out every night intending to have the best match on the card. They weren't. They said, you know what? If you're going to put us together, then we're going to go get matching trunks made.
Yeah.
They took
had
a lot
the vest.
Of they had the vest made. I mean, they took it all on themselves, started doing tag team moves, and then they split them up because they got over.
Yeah. It stinks so bad. I think back to when Dusty, I guess it's 87 or 88, when he went WWF, and he's wearing the polka dot trunks.
Yeah.
Totally meant as a rib. And Dusty said, I'm going to roll with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He said, I used to wear stuff like this all the time back in the 70s. It ain't no.
Yeah.
He'd wear tie-dye and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't care.
And I think there's so many guys in wrestling today who, if they don't like what the office is offering them or giving them, they don't make the best of it.
Not only do they not make the best of it, they don't step up and say, no, that sucks.
Right.
They don't do either. They just accept it and they do it halfway.
And now, do you think at that point in time, if Austin had kind of stood up to the bookers and said, well, you guys promised me this, what's going on? At that point in time, the temperature of the territory, they're obviously not going to give in to him, but do you think that he would have been fired?
He might have been. Because you didn't have a guy like Vince McMahon. See, from what I've heard and understand, I don't know. You can only go with people. That people who stand up for themselves and stand up to Vince McMahon earn Vince McMahon's respect.
Right.
Whereas with a guy like Bischoff, I don't think that was the case.
Yeah. And McMahon, if you proved him wrong and he knew it, he would tell you.
And also from what you hear guys like Austin say, when they said, what do you think about this? And he said, I think it sucks. And they said, then you come up with a better name.
Right.
Same with Triple H. They wanted to call him, on the podcast, they wanted to call him something. I don't remember what it was.
It wasn't terrorizing, was it?
No.
Terrible.
It was three names, but it was like, you know, McGillicuddy. It was one of them kind of things, you know? And he was like, no, he said, I like the Hunter was the first one. Mm-hmm. So that's cool, but he said it'd be nice if it was three letters that when you put them together, they made a word.
Yeah.
And they come back with Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And he said, well, I can work with three H's.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can make that happen.
That's worked well for him the past 20 years or so.
And then apparently Shawn Michaels from day one called him Triple H because he thought it was funny. He said, I'm not saying Hunter Hearst Helmsley every time I want to call you, so I'm going to call you Triple H. And then when they wanted to start changing things around, it had become his nickname backstage, so they just used it.
A little bit of backstage, looking through the curtain there. You mentioned McGillicuddy. All right.
Okay.
So just real quick, I don't want to give too much credence to these current trends.
Yeah.
McGillicuddy, who is now Curtis Axel. First you have Curtis Axel is going to be a Paul Heyman guy.
Right.
Then you got Ryback's going to be Paul Heyman guy. Neither one of them were good as Paul Heyman guys, so they put them together. I got no problem with them putting it together.
No.
But why I got to call him Ryback-sel?
Yeah.
What does that even mean? I don't understand it.
Somebody sitting around.
Hey, we gonna call him? I mean, yeah. That's terrible.
That's a pretty good voice. That's a pretty good voice. See, and here's the thing. And here's why it doesn't work. Because when you bring up Ryback-sel, I don't have anything to say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What else can I say about it? They ruined everything. Listen, Ryback was a draw.
Yeah.
People don't. When he started getting hot.
Yeah.
And he challenged Punk. More people bought that pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Their buy rates went up on those pay-per-views.
Yeah.
They had a new babyface star on their hand.
Yeah.
And I don't understand their whole deal when somebody, they say they want people to grab a brass ring.
Yeah.
And they want people to get over. Well, he did.
Yeah.
And they just, in one night at WrestleMania, Mark Henry beats him for no reason. Yeah. And then he turns heel on John Cena and it killed it.
Well, can I say this?
But he could still be a big draw.
Right. I'll say this. When I was at the Monday Night Raw two Mondays after that WrestleMania. And they let Ryback cut his first lengthy promo. It was a tape promo.
Right.
It was long and terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It may, a good promo gets me emotionally invested.
Yeah.
I was in the arena, and I turned the channel in my brain. Meaning, right. I was on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had paid 40, 50 bucks to go to Raw, and I'm at Raw during a live segment, and I'm on my phone.
Yeah.
Okay? That's... So anyway, enough about Ryback. But now there's some of these thrown together teams recently. I go back when they put Edge and Orton together. Now that wasn't a great team, but I like the rated RKO. That name makes sense.
It sounded good. I actually thought they were a good tag team.
Yeah. Oh, man, you could put Edge with anybody.
The problem with that kind of stuff is you know where it's going.
Right.
They're going to wind up feud with each other at some point.
Right. I mean, somebody's going to have to turn.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with all of these thrown together tag teams.
Right.
They all
end up in the same place.
I mean, the Rock and Roll Express has been together 30 years.
Yeah.
The Midnight Express. All these guys, the tag teams that weren't thrown together, they were packaged as a tag team. Most of those have stood the course of time. I have no doubts in my mind that if Road Warrior Hawk were still alive, he and Animal would still be doing stuff together.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah, they would.
I think they absolutely would be doing that. Now, so I'm going to throw out some... Let's play word association with some thrown-together tag teams. Jericho.
Oh, that's awful. Chris Jericho and the Big Show.
Yeah.
I just...
Now, I think that they could be... They can make it like... All right, here we go. Show Miz.
Oh... I'm not wasting another breath talking about how stupid The Miz is.
All right, MVP and Mark Henry.
I thought that worked.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're a great tag team, no, but, you know, you had the powerhouse and you had the guy that could kind of pull off the faster moves. That was what I would be looking for in a tag team. I actually thought it was a good tag team.
Right.
And they came out, they got matching.
Right.
That's they got
right.
matching trunks and they made a go at it.
Yeah.
There again, they actually took it and made something out of it.
Now, what did they have a name?
I don't remember.
That was during the dark days.
Yeah, I don't remember, but I just remember that MVP and Mark Henry still wears his that say WSM down the back, World's Strongest Man.
Right.
So he had MVP on one and then WSM on the other, and I think he still wears those.
Yeah. I mean, because I guess he's going against Rusev.
Publia.
So you got on here the Gangstanators.
Yeah, you don't remember that? That's an old ECW.
All right, tell me.
You had the Gangstas and the Eliminators, and
the Eliminators.
And they
like
feuded and done a lot of stuff together, and then Saturn split off, and Mustafa left. So all you had left was New Jack and Cronus, and then they got together and called themselves the Gangstanators.
That's pretty
and
good.
They went. They started facing people for the time. I can't remember all the stuff. I just remember liking the tag team, thinking it was cool that they had.
Yeah, who was it that was? Who was Rob Van Dam? A tag team? Was it Sabu?
Sabu.
Were they the tag champs?
Oh yeah.
But they were lengthy.
Had a long run, even when they weren't. The champions, they still were, and they had a cool dynamic. We've talked about it before where they didn't get along.
Right.
It was kind of like, I don't know what they're calling them, Heath Slater.
Keith 3MB.
Keith Slater and Titus O'Neil.
Oh, okay.
They're like the Gator and the Slater or something like that. I don't even know where the Gator comes from.
He played football for Florida.
Oh, well, there you go. That's what I thought. But
Heath's
Corner. Heath's Corner for today.
Hey, I knew something that you didn't know.
Well, I knew it. I just hadn't got to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they've put them together, and they're kind of doing the same thing.
One of the most popular ones that had, and this is at a time in the last couple of years when the tag team cabinet completely bare for WWE. And that's when they put Daniel Bryan and Kane together. And you had Team Hell No. And I thought that was a great... Because it was kind of serious. It was kind of not. They would do the hugging. And like it was entertaining.
Yeah,
I would say
entertaining.
That.
Yeah. And it made Kane more relevant than he's been in years or than he's been since.
That that reignited his career.
Yeah. Yeah, he had gotten real stale, real stagnant. And it took Daniel Bryan to the stratosphere.
I mean, it did everything it was supposed to do.
Absolutely.
It was perfect.
It did.
But I don't know that they intended for all of that when they did it.
No, I don't think they did.
You think it happened by accident?
Yeah, I do think that was a happy accident.
Right, yeah.
It did more than it was intended to do. I think it was intended to give them something to do, to be entertaining, and it got over.
Yeah.
It got over.
And they had a good mix. They were totally different styles, working styles.
Yeah.
So here's what I want to do. I'm going to throw this at you. Okay, go ahead.
Can I just mention Owen Hart?
Yes.
Teaming up with Yokozuna?
Yes.
I thought that was a good tag team.
Yeah, Owen Hart was on your list of top tag team wrestlers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He won titles with
a lot of different people. A
lot of different people. He was a great tag team wrestler. Go back. We don't ever talk about the AWA a lot. AWA had a strength. They had the Road Warriors who...
There's a reason.
Okay. the Road Warriors finally lose the AWA belts, and it's to Jimmy Garvin and Steven Regal. Not that Regal.
Not Lord Steven.
Not the Steven Regal you've ever heard of. I always thought that was odd. And then they lose the belts to Scott Hall and Curt Hennig. It was like AWA's like, here you had the Crusher and Bruiser.
Mm-hmm.
They were tag team for decades.
Yeah, they were icons.
Icons. Uh-huh. You go to the Road Warriors, icons. And then Jimmy Garvin and Steven Regal.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense.
No, I just, it went downhill from there.
So is it cool Curt Hennig and Cowboy Scott Hall? Was that?
Now, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, they had not teamed in WWF.
I mean, I'm sure at some point, somewhere on a house show. But it wasn't a...
I thought when they brought them in as a package, I thought in that scenario, I thought that was great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I've been going back and watching some of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's incredible how good that NWO angle was before they watered it down.
Right. I don't think it's any secret. I'm not the biggest Kevin Nash fan in the world.
Right.
But The genesis of the NWO angle up to Hogan, up to Six coming in, that was awesome.
Yeah.
That was great. That was great, great stuff. And on top of that, they had a great cruiserweight match, and then you could bring in these guys that weren't the great workers, but boy, you were tuning in to see who's joining the NWO tonight. Who's coming in? Oh, Buff back. Oh, crap.
Yeah. And see, it was cool that they, like I'm seeing now, they wouldn't just have a new guy every night. It would be a few weeks of speculation.
Yes.
They're saying somebody else is coming.
Yeah.
When they did the big attack behind the scene that everybody where he throws Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
They're going, wait, he said there was four of them.
Yeah.
You know, so it builds the speculation. Who's jumping?
And as the NWO grew, you started having more thrown together tag teams within the NWO.
Yeah.
Where you went from Hall and Nash being the head tag team to it went Buff Bagwell and Scott Norton.
Scott Steiner.
What was the name there?
Scott Norton? Yeah.
Scott.
He teamed with Scott Steiner later.
But what was their...
Pretty something? I don't know. That's so forgettable. There's nothing that Buff Bagwell really ever did that I...
Or Scott Norton.
Scott Norton, I get. I mean, he's a big, tough guy.
Right.
He was big in Japan.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, I ain't hate on Scott Norton.
Right.
But he wasn't a favorite of mine.
No.
But I'll hate on Buff Bagwell. He sucked.
He did. If you can go back and watch some of those early Clash of the Champions and Marcus Alexander Bagwell.
Scotty Riggs said on Twitter the other day, he posted a picture of him, and he said, I don't think people understand how hard it was to be this cheesy, or how much work it took to be this cheesy.
Let me throw this out at you, okay? I'm going to put you in charge of...
Oh, Lord.
Put you in charge of WWE.
We have a little dead air while I think.
I'm going to put you in charge. I'm going to give you three opportunities, okay? I'm going to put you in charge Mid-Atlantic Wrestling in the 80s. Who is a thrown-together tag team that you didn't see? Who's a dream tag team?
Magnum T.A. and Nikita Koloff.
Oh.
Magnum T.A. and Nikita Koloff.
Yeah, I don't know that. I think that's the answer.
Yeah.
Most of the time when we make fun of people on Facebook who throw out, hey, who'd you think would win if these guys wrestled? And they've wrestled.
Yeah, they wrestled.
They've already wrestled. It's somewhere. Maybe it was in Japan or something. But Magnum and Nikita on the same side in a ring, never saw that. Dude, that would have been
who? What else you got?
All right. 80s WWF. Who would you put together?
Well, that was Hogan and Macho we talked about.
Right, right. But who's somebody you didn't see that you would have liked to have seen together?
Man, that's a good question. Mr. Perfect and the Ultimate Warrior.
Ooh.
One's a really good, one's a powerhouse, one's a good technical wrestler.
Would they be called the Perfect Warriors?
You know, could be.
I'm pretty sure that's
those,
what they
those two mean, names right? just yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what they call them. Those names just popped into mind. I don't know.
No, that's good.
Rick Rude and Kurt Hennig, which they teamed up later, I know, but I think that'd be. Or Rick Rude and the Ultimate Warrior.
Or Kurt Hennig and Bret Hart.
Yeah. There you go. That's a heck of a tag team right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Kurt Hennig and Bret Hart versus Rick Rude and the Ultimate Warrior. That's a match right there, my man.
Wow. All right, let's move. It doesn't have to be any, sir. If you're booking today, who's two guys you would love to see that you think it could work and it could elevate somebody?
I don't know. What they're doing right now sucks.
Right.
So
they don't have any tag teams.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't matter.
I mean, I like the Usos. I like, to me, Goldust and Stardust.
I'd like the Usos a lot better if they get a mean streak about them.
Yeah, I think that's coming. I think that's what they're leading to. There's no good heel.
No.
Tag teams. I don't think they let the Real Americans play out. I think that could have gone.
Yeah, I think that had legs, man.
Yeah,
I really do. I think that had legs.
I think there for a while when they were getting the Real Americans, and Rod Baxel's not the best, but you can't, every tag team can't be on top.
Right.
I mean, you got to have your Mulkey Brothers.
Everybody can't be the Road Warrior.
Right. But I thought they were kind of building the tag team thing back up, and now lately it's like the Usos and Usos just wrestle the same guys every week, which is not fair to the Usos. I think they could be a great tag team.
Mm-hmm.
Never hear them cut a promo. We talked about that before.
Oh, they did Monday night.
Oh. Is there a reason that they're not letting them cut
a promo? Yeah, I think so.
Jiminy Cricket. All right. So, anybody else from today? If you were going to put Cesaro with somebody, who could you put Cesaro with? And have a great tag team and kind of...
Jack Swagger. I mean, they did it. Right. I'm not being a smart aleck. I just...
Yeah, they had it. And then
I think they had something on their hands that could have had some real legs to it. And
yeah.
They systematically ruined Cesaro.
Do you think... you mentioned Heath Slater earlier when they had the three-man band, Heath Slater, Drew McIntyre, and the third guy. I don't remember. Jinder Mahal. Do you think that was something where creative said, you three jobbers are going to all be together, and they came up with three-man band and tried to...
No, actually, Drew McIntyre talked about the whole thing on Chris Jericho's podcast. And I think it was going to have some legs, and he got hurt right as it was getting started. And it just kind of derailed the whole thing.
Yeah. I think Drew McIntyre...
I think he's a guy like Cesaro that, you know, Cesaro was there. in like 2005 or 2006, and he got cut.
Yeah.
And went out and made a name for himself and then came back.
Yeah.
And I think it's not too late for Drew McIntyre to do that.
I agree. And
People need to forget about him. He needs to come back with a new look.
Yeah.
A new attitude. You know, people need to forget 3MB.
Yeah.
He needs to go to Japan. Please. He needs to go a couple of different places and work a little bit and get a little more experience.
Go to Japan and get roughed up some.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
get calloused up a little bit.
Let me tell you, if you can get over in Japan, you can get over anywhere. I don't know. That's a different.
Yeah, it's a different thing. I mean, I don't know.
So since we're talking about Japan. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about thrown together tag teams. You are a connoisseur of Japanese wrestling.
No, don't go that far.
But who, as you think back, who were some thrown together tag teams?
Doc and Gordy.
Yeah.
I don't know that they were thrown together.
Right.
Vader and Stan Hansen were a tag team. Kenta Kobashi and Mitsuhiro Misawa had an incredible feud. If you've never seen any of their matches, you are missing some of the greatest wrestling matches that ever took place. And then they teamed up, and they would take on, like, you know, believe it or not, Johnny Ace. John Laurinaitis was a big star over there.
Wasn't there a point in time when Road Warrior Animal was hurt, and they put Hawk with
Kensuke Sensaki and called him the Power Warrior?
Yeah.
And Animal didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they had some issues over that.
Right, right, right.
Animal didn't like him doing that.
Yeah.
But he come around, and then they did a 6-man deal where all three of them. But yeah, the Power Warriors. And I forget what Kensuke Sensaki's Road Warrior name was. But
there's so many, like, when you look at, I was watching a match, and it was Goldberg and somebody that you would never place him with against two guys you would never put together, and you sure wouldn't put him. I can't remember who it was, but a lot of Japanese wrestling, you'd have Andre the Giant teaming with somebody. I think it was. What was the match I saw? It was Andre and Stan Hansen. We talked about this versus Baba and the Abdullah the Butcher.
Yeah.
Do you think they do that in Japan because guys are only over there for a couple of weeks and they're trying
to make as much money as we can?
Yeah. I wish they would do that in.
You know, they did. I think I might have let you borrow the DVD. I don't know. Where Sting and Muta teamed up and faced the Steiner brothers.
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, that's a good match, man.
Really? You got it on DVD?
I do have it on DVD.
I wonder if that's online anywhere.
I'm sure it is.
Golly, yeah, Sting Muta.
Yeah, it's a good match, man.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, Sting. And then you get the Steiners taking on Vader and Bam Bam Bigelow, who were a tag team over there.
Golly.
Yeah, that's a good match, too. You're talking about a hard-hitting match.
But again, they're not doing it for a long run. Or some of them are.
Yeah, some of them are, like Brody and Hanson. I mean, they were together for a long time over there.
Yeah, yeah.
And not just there. I mean, they moved around. I apologize for coughing. For folks that don't know where I work at, we have a lot of stuff in the air. And sometimes it gets in your sinuses and kind of messes them up. So I apologize if my voice is a little rough and I'm coughing a little bit. I inhaled some stuff.
Listen, Mark ran into a mine the other day and saved
some kids.
Saved some kids and a goat, and you know, he's just being modest. Listen, when we think about the wrestling we grew up with, it all started with a tag team. It started with the Rock and Roll Express. That's why we call this a Double Drop Kick Show. Tag team wrestling is always going to have a special place on our show and in our hearts. Mark, you were actually in a tag team.
Yes, sir.
I was in a pretend tag team, multiple time tag team champion. You were in a real tag team, multiple tag team champions. Any other thoughts? Today we've been talking about not real tag teams, but kind of those thrown together. Let me ask you this, Mark, okay? Were you in Tank? You were the Death Dealers. How did that? Were you guys just thrown together? Yeah, how did that come
pretty
about?
Pretty much, yeah. It was, man, it's been a long time. I was just kind of starting, so I was real green, but could move real well.
Yeah.
At the time, I don't move too well now, but I can move pretty good. I pretty much took to it pretty quick. but was still green and still needed to cover up some of that. And Tank was pretty good. He'd been doing it a couple of years. And I had teamed with another guy as baby faces. Mm-hmm. And we just weren't.
You're not.
He was a good guy.
Yeah.
He was a good guy. But it just wasn't working. And I'm not a baby face. And,
right.
And I said, man, I want to be a heel. I want to, you know, me and Tank had been talking and we look a little bit alike. And
yeah.
We're kind of similar build. And we had talked. And so we worked a deal where you hear Todd Gibson and I talk all the time. Me, Mark, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because I turned heel on my partner.
Right.
In Westminster, and Todd Gibson stood up and said, "Me, Mark, what are you doing?" And my daddy was there, and he still says that. and then me and Tank were just off and running, and it was basically the same thing as Austin and Pillman.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this to you. I don't know if I've talked about it on here. Tank and I had a shoot partnership, and we each handled different stuff, and he handled the people.
Yeah.
He dealt with, here's who we're going to go work for, and here's where we need to be, and
right.
all that. He just told me, and I handled the creative because he understood that creatively I knew how to do that, and I understood that he had good people skills, and he was good at talking to people, and he would get us to the building, and then I would take over, and we'd say, what's the finish? And Tank would go talk to Mark. And he'll tell you what we're going to do, and then he'll tell me.
Yeah,
you know, y'all figure it out. He'll tell me. But I had a lot to do with the creation of the name, and you know, I told him like I wore a black singlet. He needed to wear a blue singlet.
Uh-huh.
So it would be black and blue.
Yeah,
and just that subtle message that we'll make you. We're going to make you black and blue. Just little stuff like that. Like I took the, you know. So it was taking something that we were going to do and saying, all right, let's do it for real.
Right.
And let's dress alike. So we went and bought pants that looked alike.
Yeah.
You know, that was, and we both shaved our heads.
That's commitment to the art.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a shoot partnership that we had.
That's awesome.
You know, he handled the business part of it, and I handled the creative part of it. So.
And every time we see Todd, he always,
he says,
you got one more in you.
That's right. You got one more match in you. I was like, nah. And I want to. The spirit's willing, but the flesh is weak.
I know what you mean. It is good to, and Todd is managing now, and we're hoping to get him on the show. And he manages one of those kind of teams.
That's a very old school heel tag team.
And they're great.
But they are.
You know how they're great is they were the first match on the card, and there wasn't that much heat the rest of the night.
Right.
Because
they were great.
Right. They knew how to get, and
didn't. I didn't see nobody cut a flip.
No,
nobody come off the top rope.
Nah.
Nobody jumped from the ring to the floor.
I don't know that they left their feet.
You know.
I mean, they took a couple.
They
of
took
bumps.
A couple of bumps, but they understood how to get crowd heat.
Oh yeah, and it was old school.
It was old school crowd heat, and they had a great match.
And they got my kids go to wrestling, and my kids. They got the attention span of a gnat.
They've got the attention span of their daddy.
but these guys are like hide change in their chain, not change, chains in their pocket. And my kids will be going, ref, ref, ref. Look, I mean, and that's what you want.
And they understood the psychology of not, you don't just pull a chain out of your pocket. You pull a chain out of your pocket and show it to the crowd.
Yeah. Because they'll just, those guys.
A lot of these guys now just get it out and hide it and pound and get it back. No, you don't get the crowd heat if you don't show the crowd that you're cheating.
What's, you got the American GI. What's the other guy's name?
I don't.
The other guy, while he's on the apron, he will pull the chain out of one pocket just to put it in a different pocket.
Yeah, just
pocket.
To put it in the other pocket,
he,
just
he
to show
great,
people. Yeah,
and I really, you know, they're not going to make it in WrestleMania anytime soon.
No.
For the Westminster.
And it's not like you're telling them anything they don't know.
And listen, and I mean this, okay? I totally mean this. Those guys gave me my money's worth.
That was a great match.
We could have gone home after that match. And I'd have been totally satisfied.
And I'll tell you why, because I couldn't tell you who they wrestled or what they looked like.
Right.
But I remember them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's, you don't have to do so much.
No.
Slow down. You don't have to do all them flips and.
Yeah.
It just ain't necessary to get over.
And go back again to.
But I'll say there probably wasn't a smart mark in the crowd.
Oh, no. No. They would have they would have started doing a chant. They would have chanted for CM Punk or...
The guy who...
Yeah, Vince Russo would have hated it.
The guy, by the way, who, from what we understand, breached his contract, quit his job, but still thinks they ought to pay him. That pretty much sums up everything I feel about that dipstick.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes.
He weighs 150 pounds, if he's lucky, on a bloated day. He's 150 pounds if he's got a brick in his pocket. You know what I mean? What's CM Punk going to do? Let him listen to this and come to Pendleton. I agree with Brock Lesnar. Don't think that going and doing judo with your buddies on Thursday nights makes you a tough guy. Come on down to Pendleton if you don't like it, Punk.
When Mark gets riled up about CM Punk, it's great. I go back to the Hollywood Blondes, and we talked about them. And to me... They got over because they just made you hate them so much.
That's the key.
Yeah.
Jim Ross talks about it all the time. Nobody wants legitimate heat.
No.
They want cool heat. Yes. They want to be cool. Nobody wants to be a real bad guy anymore except Brock Lesnar, and that's why he's so good at it.
Well, here's the thing. It's almost like there's this invisible line now, and nobody will cross that line. A couple weeks ago, when Seth Rollins put Ambrose through the cinder blocks, there was a look in his eye of he's going to do it again. And everybody's like, that's enough. And I like how Rollins played it. But how much more awesome would it have been if he did?
If he had done it. And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They don't go far enough.
Right. And now there was a time when everybody went too far.
Right.
From the first match on the card to the last match on the card, everybody went too far and it just lost its everything.
Yeah, after you've seen, you know, somebody jump a bicycle over a ditch and then they set the ditch on fire.
Right.
You know, and then they put a hoop around it and then they light the hoop up. You know, and then they put a tiger in the middle of it after you've done.
And then they make you ride a unicycle.
Yeah, through it. That's right. I mean, at some point you got to kill somebody to get over.
Right.
But if you use that type of stuff sparingly, you can hot shot every once in a while.
Yeah,
that's what you have to do. There's nothing wrong with hot shotting every now and then.
Right.
But you can't do it six segments a night for 2 years. And if you want an education on that. Look, listen to Jim Cornette, the Jim Cornette Experience, where he interviews Lance Storm about the Attitude Era from about 2 or 3 months ago. It's an education on what can happen when you hotshot a territory.
Right.
And the late 90s were two hotshotting territories. They were every single week, and it just killed the wrestling business.
You bring up Lance Storm, who, one of my favorites, he was in a tag team, Impact Players. Mm-hmm. It was him and Just Incredible. And who was there was another person in there.
Jason or something.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But
ECW had some good thrown together tag teams like that.
Yeah, they
thought that was good. Of course, just good stuff. I mean, I'm telling you, it just does my heart good to talk about. Because when we do the show, I hear stuff that I've never heard about before, seen before, and I want to go watch that. I hear about stuff, you know, you can go watch stuff on the network, but listen, Mark has said it before, and I want to echo, WWE is the gatekeepers of a lot of wrestling history, but not all of it.
No, there's still stuff out there.
I said it on a previous episode. Listen, if you're a wrestling fan, if you grew up when we did, and you would say to us, well, wrestling's just not the same, I don't want to watch it.
I understand that.
Fine. But, man, you can go online and watch so much of it for free. Don't pay $9.99.
Yeah, you know, between Daily Motion and YouTube, man, there's not much that ain't out there.
Right, right.
From these other promotions.
It is great. I mean, it reminds you of the wrestling you grew up with.
Yeah.
And if we can, I'm telling you, it would do my heart good if you're out there and you're not watching wrestling anymore, and this show gets you back into loving wrestling, job well done. I'd pat myself on the back. I mean, I would go toot, toot. For sure. anyway, we've been talking about thrown together tag teams. We mentioned the Crockett Cup, Crockett Cup 87, which is on YouTube.
Can I tell you another one of my favorite tag teams of all
time?
Yeah,
you can.
Heath Mulligan, Mark Whitman, the Double Drop Kick Show.
That's right. And they have their own website at doubledropkick.com. And if you want to put us in the Hall of Fame, very simple. Two things you can do. Go to Facebook, like our page. Or what's the other thing they can do on our website?
You're going to find these things on there called banners.
Banners.
You're going to need to click on a banner.
Yeah. Not, it ain't a Bruce banner. It ain't a school banner.
It ain't David banner.
It ain't David banner. It's my banner.
That's right.
And you click on it and support.
It ain't your dog spot. It ain't your liver spot.
We need to put a banner that just says your dog spot or something and take you to it. So we want to hear from you at the DDK show on Twitter, at Heath Mulligan on Twitter, on our Facebook page. Who are your favorite thrown together tag teams of all time? If you were the booker, if you were in charge today, who would you throw together? Or better yet, if you could throw together two guys, man, we talked about this, you know, before. Two guys you would throw together and just say, man, I think they'd be a great tag team. Let us know. Join the conversation. We don't have all the answers. I mean, we do. I'm just saying that to make you feel better about yourself.
Well, we don't have all the answers. I've got all the answers.
So let us know what you think. Let us know your favorite tag teams. And, you know, always leave us a comment. Talk to us on Twitter. We want to hear from you. So anyway, as always, for the Double Drop Kick Show, I'm Heath Mulligan.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.
Have all the answers. I've got all the answers.